hockey with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Sochi this past May. Putin playing in an annual charity exhibition along with several former NHL and NHL stars, National Hockey League stars. Can you talk about the circumstance of this in this last minute we have together?
Well, I mean, it was a little bit humiliating because President Putin stacked his team with all the greatest hockey players in Russian history, and the opposition was guys like me. So I think we lost 11-5.
And what was it like meeting Putin?
Before the game, somebody skated up to me and they say, "John, you know what the rules are, don't you?" And the rules are that you don't check President Putin. So we were at a little bit of a disadvantage.
Meaning you don't hit him.
Yes, you don't hit
him. You don't body block
correct,
him.
Correct, correct. But I'm the only American that's ever played hockey against him. And I think we've seen that sports is a way of bringing people together, ping pong diplomacy. The first cultural ambassador of the United States sent to Japan after World War II was Babe Ruth. And you can bridge gaps with sports just as you can bridge gaps with film.
Your assessment of Putin as a hockey player?
I've actually challenged him to a one-on-one game. He knows it, and I'm waiting for him to come on the ice with me.
When he comes here for the summit with Trump?
Either there or anywhere he wants.
Maybe you can do it on Trump's ice hockey ice rink in Central Park.
At Woolman Park. That's a really good idea. I'm going to suggest it to him.
Well, I want to thank you all for being with us. That does it for the show. John Alpert, John Novick, and Ben Rosloff. The film is called All for One. You can check it out at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Has a job opening for a broadcast engineer here in New York City. Find out more at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Birkin, Abe Feltz, Carla Wells, and Noreen Sheikh. Laura Gattasino. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio. Featuring local and independent artists.
The program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone, where local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is Mr. Tim Price. Tim has worked as a robot operator and line worker, as well as in quality control in the automotive industry. And he had 48 credit hours in the field of science with Illinois Valley Community College, but unfortunately had to leave school to go home to run the family business after his grandfather fell ill. But Tim's offering to this show's genre stems from his assertion of lifelong interaction with otherworldly beings. He claims to have been abducted by them since childhood and has had many such encounters. Tim first contacted the Experiencer Research Team, or ERT, which is recommended by but is a separate entity from the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON. Michigan MUFON investigator John Boudry, also affiliated with ERT, took Tim's case acting as an abductee counselor. John recommended Tim to me because, in his opinion, Mr. Price's case is legitimate and worthy of further analysis. So, with his permission, I will be picking his brains today. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Well, glad to have you. You came highly recommended. So, tell our listeners, when was the first time you remember an experience with an otherworldly being?
Well, it was back when my family lived on Acorn Street at the edge of a small town, and I remember getting called down to dinner just like any other night, except this time as I came down the stairs, I noticed what appeared to be a very old, very strange-looking man just standing in the corner staring at me as I came down the stairs, and as I walked to the dinner table, his head turned and he just watched me. And as I sat down to dinner, I asked my mom, "Who's that old man in the corner?" And my mom got a confused look on her face. She looked in the corner. She didn't see anything. And she looked back at me and said, "Stop being stupid." And so I proceeded to look again, and he was still there, still looking dead at me. And at that point, I was 7 years old. I didn't know what an alien was. I just thought it was a very ugly old man. And so I said it again, and I actually pointed with my finger, "That old man right there, who is that?" And then my stepdad yelled at me, "Your mom said stop being stupid." And that's when I learned that there's just some things you can't talk about in mixed company.
Okay, so you say you saw this older man. Is it possible that it was a spirit entity?
I don't think so, because it was solid. I mean, just as solid as everybody else in the room. I don't know why they couldn't see it. At that point, I didn't know anything about mind control, telepathy, shielding, cloaking, anything like that. And it sure didn't look human. But the closest approximation I could make was an old man. Because he was very pale, like, you know, the elderly are. He didn't have any hair, and he had big black eyes, and it just, you know, looked like, you know, the best thing I could come up with was an old man.
Okay, so he had the big black eyes, right?
Oh, yeah.
Grayish skin?
No, it was white.
Yeah, okay. Well, it could... Yeah, I was going to say it could appear white or gray. Yeah.
Yeah, the grays aren't really gray. It's been my experience, they're an off-white.
Right.
I think the reason most people call them gray is because every time I've ever been abducted or I've ever been in the presence of them, it's always very dark. They don't like light, apparently.
You don't like light. Now, that's odd because very often I will hear, in fact, virtually all the time, I hear that those who are abducted are in the craft, it's very well lit. In fact, they go into a light that is so bright, it should hurt your eyes, but does not. And there's no shadows.
Yes, I've heard that as well, but that has not been my experience. Mm-hmm. I've read about and seen the shows where they say, oh, they felt this sense of warmth and love and how they're here to be our friends and to guide us into the Galactic Federation.
Mm-hmm.
And I never encountered anything remotely like that.
Okay.
This was all very methodical, very clinical, very just matter of fact. Just like how, you know, a farmer might care for his animals. You know, when they're sick, he takes them to the doctor. When they're trapped in the mud, he gets them out. But he only cares so much because, remember, come the end of the year when he takes them off to harvest, you know, those cows don't have a happy ending.
Takes them to slaughter, right?
Exactly. So just because they, you know, pretend to care for you, I don't think that's the real caring that humans think of as caring.
Yeah. Huh. But they, the farmer does want to keep those that cattle well and happy and fat until it's time for slaughter, right?
Exactly, because I remember time after time when they were doing something that hurt, and I would literally be, you know, screaming and crying and, you know, please, you know, make the pain go away. And the only response I would get is a voice in my mind, because, of course, they don't talk out loud,
right,
was that, don't worry, you won't remember the pain anyway. So absolutely no empathy whatsoever. You know, why would they care if you were now? They're not going to remember it. You know, if they really, truly cared for you, just like if you took your dog to the vet and he was hurt, you'd ask the doctor to give him something for the pain.
Right.
You wouldn't say, oh, he's just an animal. He'll forget about it.
Yeah, really. But obviously you have not forgotten about the pain.
Oh, no, no. This, even though I'm 54 now, and the last time that I have a conscious memory of being abducted was in my 20s, I still, you know, do not like them, as it were. I don't think like a lot of people that they're here to help us, they're here to save us, they're here to, you know, help us in some weird way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that way at all. I think they're here for their own agenda. I don't even pretend to know what that is. But that they're here for their own reasons. They're not here for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've heard, too, that, and I think it's pretty obvious, that there are many species out there, and maybe, you know, the ones that the abductees or experiencers who claim that they're all for us and want our well-being, maybe that's true of that particular species, but not of the species that you have encountered. Is that possible?
Oh, that's very possible, because the only ones I've ever encountered are the grays and the tall whites. I've never seen a praying mantis. I've never seen a reptilian. I've never seen any of the tall Nordics. I've never seen any of the humans in military outfits that are supposedly working with the grays and tall whites.
Mm-hmm.
The only ones I have ever seen my entire life have been the grays and have been the tall whites. And they are all just, you know, the same. I mean, if you lined 100 of them up, you could not tell them apart.
Mm.
Now, whether that means they're clones or robots, I don't know. But they're almost all identical.
Yeah. Clone is the word I hear a lot. I think
yeah, that is very easy to believe, because even in humans, there's, you know, differences in height and so forth. But with them, they're all exactly the same height and exactly the same face. They never have an expression. I don't think I ever saw one open its mouth, although you could tell they have a mouth because there's a slit there.
Mm-hmm.
But they, I mean, it's, they act like robots. So they very well could be robots or clones or just all very disciplined.
But they seem biological, right?
Yes, yes, they do seem biological. When they touch you, they have body heat.
Mm.
It's not cold. I mean, it's not as warm as a human body, but you could tell that it's alive. It's not, you know, a robot,
right, right,
in my experience.
So, yeah, they act robotic, but they seem to be biological, therefore probably clones, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And I think that they're just very clinical in what they're doing. You know, you come in, you get your exam, they do their job. Just like somebody on a production line, you do the same thing every day. I'm just a number to them.
Yeah. So you see this old man, and you were 7 at the time, and that was your first encounter with otherworldly beings, right?
That's the earliest that I can remember, yes.
And how about the next time? Obviously, there was a next time.
Yeah, it could have been that night or just a night or two after that. I woke up in the middle of the night, and there were 4 or 5 of them at the foot of my bed just staring at me.
Hmm.
And these were shorter than the previous one. The other one was what I know now to be a tall white. These were the short grays. And at that time, I wasn't very tall, you know, only 7 years old. And they were about, I would say, probably 3 and a half feet tall. And they were in the semicircle at the foot of my bed. and I was terrified. I couldn't scream. I couldn't pull the covers over my head. I just froze. Hmm. And I had that memory for about, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, and then black. I don't remember anything after that.
Hmm. So it's, do you think it was the fact that you were terrified that you could not move or scream, or do you think that they disabled you in some manner?
Oh, I think they disabled me, because at the very least I would have pulled the blankets up over my head.
Right.
You know, that's the first move you do as a scared kid.
Right.
But I learned, you know, later on, that once they need eye contact with you, it's like putting a key in a lock. Mm-hmm. You know, all they got to do is make eye contact, and they can remotely control you. They can, you know, they don't have to lift you. You'll get up yourself.
Yeah.
You'll do cartwheels if they want you to. They can control us like we can control a little car. It's amazing the amount of control that they have.
Hmm. Okay, so it was that night. Do you recall anything about after you blacked out? You called.
Not on that incident, but it was shortly after that me and my sisters were out playing in our backyard, which was huge, and so was everybody else's. We were on the edge of town, and I happened to look over and notice that there were three of them along the fence, you know, on the other side of our backyard fence.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt a compulsion to go over to them, and that was the first time that I wasn't scared, because it was, you know, daytime. It was a cloudy day, but it was daytime. You know, other kids are out playing, cars are driving by, and there's three of them just standing along the fence line, just staring at me. And so I walked over to them, and I cannot tell you, if you offered me $1 million, I couldn't tell you what we talked about. But we talked for a little bit, and after that talk, later that night, for some unknown reason, I get up in the middle of the night, I get dressed, I unlocked the door. I had to move a chair to get up to be tall enough to undo the chain lock and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I sneak out of the house, and I go back down to the fence where they were, and they're there again. I climb over the fence, and they lead me down. And this is a big, empty field. But this time at night, all of a sudden there's trees all around it, and it's like a forest.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I can't explain that either. And then all of a sudden there's a little house, and they lead me into the little house, and that's all I remember. The next thing I know, I'm waking up in bed, and boom. I can't explain how I got there. I don't remember the walk back. I don't remember what we did in the little house. And, you know, now with all my knowledge and have researched it and so forth, I know that they can put, you know, fake memories, make you see what you want to see. It probably wasn't a forest and a little house. It was probably their landed ship. And they probably just, you know, went through and did their experiments, you know, like they usually do, and then sent me on back home.
So there are no trees out beyond that
No. Our back neighbor had fence, had horses, and it was just a big fence, and it was just an open field.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow, went that night. You see, and that's when I started thinking, being a little kid, oh, these are elves. This is magic. You know, and because, you know, I didn't have any other frame of reference.
Right.
You know, at that age, you know, fairy tales is the main stories that your parents read you and so forth.
Right.
And, you know, after that, I would get these compulsions just to go to certain places. When we lived on Acorn Street, it was in the big field behind the house that I would just, you know, get up in the middle of the night out of it, just wake up, and I would know I had to be there. And I would get dressed, put on my shoes, put on my clothes, and I would sneak out of the house, and I knew I had to be quiet because nobody could know that I was doing it.
Well, chances are you wouldn't have woke them up anyway.
Oh, yeah. I know. Yeah, knowing what I know now, yeah, because they have. It was shortly after that we had I remember it. I don't think my sisters do. But we were playing hide and seek, and it was after nightfall, you know, it was dark, and all the neighborhood kids were, you know, running around as kids would do in those days. This is before computer games and TV, and we had three channels.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, this fog started to roll in, and, you know, started to get this feeling that I was being watched, you know, kind of spooky. And as we're all running around fighting each other, we're hiding behind trees and so forth, we noticed that there was three very tall men at the bottom of the hill in the street just standing there staring at us. Hmm. And then they reached out their hands, like if you were going to play Red Rover, you know, and you had to bust through the hands.
Right.
Except they just stood there with their hands outstretched, like, you know, you're not going to get past it.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of freaked us out, so we started running up the street. And lo and behold, at the top of the street, there's three other tall, strange-looking men, and they had their arms out the same way.
Hmm.
And then everybody panicked, and, you know, and broke and ran into their, you know, everybody went a different way, you know, scattered. And then I don't remember anything else after that. But
okay.
That was the first time that it was like a group of us and not just me.
Okay, who was in this group? Was it friends of yours?
It was me and my two sisters and all the neighborhood kids.
Really?
There was probably 10 other kids there.
And did you speak to these children afterwards?
I wouldn't say too much at all, no. And I don't know if they might have blamed me for it, because earlier I had been, you know, telling them about my friends that lived in, you know, the back lot and how they were, you know, magical and this and that, and they all thought I was spinning a yarn, and I was trying to tell them, oh, no, it's fairies and they're real and, you know, stuff like that. And so, and I think the only reason I said that is because they wanted me to, you know, the Grays wanted me to, like, you know, hey, why don't you bring your friends to come talk to us? We'd like to meet your friend.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if they were using me as a recruiter or what, but it was one of those things. And looking back now, I deeply regret it because, I mean, nobody wants to set their friends up for something like that.
Well, no, he had no idea. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I really did. Like I said, at that time, I was so young and innocent, I really thought they were elves or fairies or, you know, something magical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never thought that they would be, you know, aliens.
Mm.
At that time, I mean, way back when, that, you know, it didn't even come up. I mean, it just didn't.
Yeah, well, we've talked before on this show about how the yarns about leprechauns and fairies... you know, these leprechauns allegedly and elves allegedly took the children in the middle of the night. And did, you know, if you hear all these stories about leprechauns and elves, the myths about them, they closely resemble what's going on in the abduction phenomenon. So,
oh yeah, there's a lot of parallels between the mythology.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It goes to show that, you know, times may have changed and the language may have changed, but the situations are almost identical.
Right. So I need to take a moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. It's 89.3 FM. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Tim Price. Tim has been an alien abductee virtually all his life, just doesn't remember it before the age of 7. How many sisters do you have? How many siblings, I should say?
Well, I have two sisters.
That's it?
And that's it, yep. One's older, one's younger.
And how much have you discussed this matter with your sisters, and do they recall any of these incidences?
I never discussed it with them as adults. When we were kids, they would get mad at me when I would bring it up.
Really?
You know, if I would say, hey, you know, because I told them about the elves in the backyard first, and they thought I was just pulling their legs or I was trying to trick them or something, and, you know, they never saw anything, and you know, or I was trying to scare them, and so they didn't want to talk about it.
Hmm.
So to the best of my knowledge, they were never, ever abducted, and why they would want me is anybody's guess. I have no idea why they would pick me.
But this one incident where the fog rolled in and these, actually six guys, three at mm-hmm. each end, they were involved in that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So did you talk to them about that? Did you see that? What was that?
Actually, I think the next day after that, they were just all in shock and they didn't want to talk about it. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, oh, it must not have happened. Oh, you were just scaring us, or you had your friends scare us. You know, they just refused to believe.
Yeah.
And they've always been kind of like that. I've always been more of, you know, what's out there. You know, I was a big fan of Star Trek when I was little.
Yeah.
And, you know, Lost in Space, you know, those first, you know, TV shows of science fiction. And neither of my sisters went that way. They're all very Little House on the Prairie, that type of TV show. So,
Are your sisters still with us today?
Oh, yes, yes.
And would they be willing to talk to MUFON?
I don't think so.
No?
I really don't think so. They are totally unlike me in that. They're very down to earth. I haven't really told them all the things that I've gone through because growing up during that time, they would have put you in a loony bin.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I, you know, found out very early, you can't talk to mom about it. You can't talk to your sisters about it, you know, and so, you know, you can't talk to anybody about it. So most of the time I just kept it to myself and figured, oh, this is just one of those things that, you know, nobody will understand that you can't tell anybody. And it's not like they took a finger or anything, you know, you never had proof.
Yeah.
So, you know, whenever I did try to talk to somebody about that, they would always just either laugh or think I was trying to pull their leg about something. So eventually I just stopped trying.
So what do you think about ERT and MUFON?
Oh, I love it. Yeah. I love it. I wish MUFON would have been around back then. I think it's a great organization, and that's how I got this whole ball rolling was I filled out the questionnaire that was online. And apparently I checked a lot of boxes because they called me up shortly after that. And, you know, it's just one of those things. I mean, my whole life has just been a part of my life. Like, I was out one time on a country road. I was about, 19, 20, 21 years old with a couple of friends. And we were just having a few beers sitting on the side of the country road, which in a very small town in the USA, that was your entertainment. And we noticed this bright light zigzagging across the sky. Mm-hmm. Now, planes and satellites go in straight lines.
Really?
And, you know, I don't care what kind of plane, what kind of helicopter, what kind of whatever you say, nothing zigzags, especially in a very regular pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And so I noticed it, and I pointed it out to them. And they went, oh, my God, what is that? And we sat there and watched it, and it just kept coming our way and getting closer until my two friends got scared, and they said, that's it, let's go. And so we got in the car, and I took them home. And then, you know, me being all brave and all, I went back out there to see, you know, if it was still there. And I dropped them off at home at about 11:30, and I get back to the place, and I look up, and nothing. You know, it's a little darker. There's no zigzagging bright light in the sky. And I look down at the clock in my car, and it says 3 o'clock. So sometime between, it's not that big a town, sometime between dropping them off, I lost 4 hours.
Lost 4 hours?
Yeah, yeah. And I got a call from my sister because the couple that I was with, the girl was one of her best friends, and she said, were you playing tricks on them and telling them that a UFO was going to come get them? Because she called me up this morning saying you scared them. And I'm going, no, we really saw a UFO. And she's like, yeah, right, and hung up. You know, again, thinking it was some elaborate prank, like, I don't know how she thought I could make a light in the sky zigzag. I don't have that kind of power.
Oh, my goodness. Some people, I mean, you know, it's nothing against your sisters, but some people just, you know, they have the mindset, this is the way the world is, and, you know, you could show them the evidence, and they could trust you to tell them the truth. But when you tell them something that is outside their that mindset, it just doesn't register, you know?
Oh, absolutely. So. Absolutely. I mean, I can barely get them to go along with believing that there's life elsewhere in the universe. Right. You know, and they find that hard to believe. And if anybody would just sit down and look at Carl Sagan's Cosmos, or look at any of the news shows that are on, and look at how phenomenally huge the universe is. And like right now, we have established that, you know, with Hubble and everything else, that there's over, and I think at last count, over 2,000 planets that we know of that have been verified. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those are Earth-type planets in, mm-hmm. you know, the Goldilocks zone that could harbor life. And that's just what we found. And we by no means have first-rate technology.
Right.
You know, we're on a third or fourth generation star in a galaxy that's barely out of its diapers. And there's galaxies out there that dwarf ours. I mean, on a phenomenally huge scale dwarf ours, that have stars that are almost as old as the universe itself. Mm-hmm. And to think if life evolved there on one of those stars, they would be like gods to us. I mean, look how far our technology has come. You know, I'm talking to you on a phone that is like a communicator from Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a kid, we had the big rotary phones. You could kill somebody if you hit somebody with a phone back in the day. And now there are these little, thin little devices that you could carry in your shirt.
Right.
And you can play games on them and everything. Yeah. And that's just our technology. Right. Imagine what we're going to be like, you know, 1,000 years from now.
Can you imagine when we were kids, like when you were 7, if somebody said, Tim, one day your voice is going to go out on the radio, you know, and you looked at your little transistor, and it's going to go out and they will be able to hear you on the other side of the world in real time. What would you have said? What would you have said to them?
I said, nah, that's Star Trek. You can't do that.
So many things in Star Trek are part of our world today, you know?
Oh, yes. It's amazing. And this is just in my lifetime.
Right.
And, you know, it's just incredible. And that's just us.
Right.
You know, and, you know, whether or not it's because we have some really good geniuses or whether it's because they really did get some, you know, UFOs, and they retro, you know, got the designs and, you back, know, went that way, because a lot of people say that, too.
Back engineered them, huh?
Yeah, reverse engineered them from, you know, broken down crafts, or maybe even negotiated with them, because who knows? I mean, if they're abducting ordinary folks, who's to say that they're not abducting governors or presidents or whoever? And I mean, and there's many cases, like there's a case back in Truman's day, a Valiant Thor. He was supposedly an alien who landed in a field, and when he ran into police, asked to be taken to the president, was taken to the president, and apparently negotiated with the president for 3 years and had VIP status. And you can even go and look him up, and they have photos of this guy. And he had VIP status, and even Truman's great-granddaughter still comments on it. She was just on an episode of Ancient Aliens I saw the other day, and she was talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you can look back in history, and you really got to wonder. I mean, you know, if they're abducting ordinary folks like me, well, that's probably for some agenda. Whether, you know, just like we take wild animals to see if they're healthy, you know, what their migration patterns are, you know, what do they need to survive and so forth. But they're also advanced enough to want to talk to the government and maybe make a treaty, like maybe they need rice or wheat or, you know, water or gold or whatever they would want. And maybe they trade a little technology here and there for a little bit of what they need.
Yeah. You never know. It's hard to say. Like I say, there's so many different, allegedly, there's so many different species. That the different species require different things. Well, there's different countries on planet Earth that have different resources, and we trade with each other. If there are other beings on other planets, is it so far-fetched to think would trade with them, you know?
Oh, exactly.
So, what was I going to... Oh, talk to me about this fog that you say this fog rolled in.
Mm-hmm. It was just like you would see in a movie when big, bad, evil things coming into town. It did not have a moon that night, so all we had was starlight and a few spaced out street lights. And all of a sudden, you know, this fog just rolls in. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't a real big temperature change like you would expect with a fog rolling in. We're on the edge of town, so sometimes things like that will happen. And then the street lights went out, which is unusual. I mean, the houses still had lights. But there was only like three of them. Like I said, we're on the edge of town. They didn't, you know, there wasn't one like every couple of feet like there is in the big cities. Mm. There was only three. There's one at the top of the hill, one in the middle of the hill, and one at the bottom of the hill. Mm. And, you know, it was a fairly nice long street. So, you know, for kids, you know, that's enough light to, you know, be out playing like we were. We were just kids. And the fog just rolled in, and I mean, it was thick. You could not see. It was almost like you were in a dome. You know, you couldn't see past the fog. And then, you know, boom, the men were just there. We never saw them walk, at least I never saw them walk in. All of a sudden, boom, they were there just at the street, one in the middle and one on each side of them. And then they put their arms out, and, you know, that was just kind of menacing because, you know, they weren't going to play Red Rover. I mean, that's a kid's game. And these were tall whites. I mean, they weren't the little grays. They were tall. They were at least 6 feet tall. So for us little kids, you know, that's kind of intimidating to see somebody doing that. Like, you know, they're going to come run and catch us or something.
Right.
And that's why we started running up to the top of the hill. And lo and behold, there was three at the top of the hill in the exact same position, arms outstretched, just staring at us.
Yeah, so I'm curious about this fog. Was it a certain color? Was it the color of a normal fog? Was it brown? Was it black one?
No, it was a color of normal fog, just like you'd have with a storm front coming in, and it just came in a little faster than what you would normally see. It wasn't, you know, a slow fog coming in, and it was basically a solid wall like you'd see in dust storms in Dubai in the Middle East, where it's just like as tall as the, you know, 10 stories. Hmm. And it just came in like a wall, and just, like I said, like a dome, just kind of covered the whole street area.
Well, you remember the movie Close Encounters?
Oh, yes, of course.
When the little boy was being abducted, and they were alone in the house, and they looked up, and this this craft was behind this fog?
Yes.
Did your fog look anything like that fog?
Yes, except there wasn't any colored lights.
Okay. And reason,
it was just, oh, go ahead.
No, finish what you're saying.
I was going to say it was thick. You know, it wasn't like a ethereal fog. It was thick to where if you tried to shine a light through it, it would not work.
Right.
I mean, it was thick fog. But it did not have any lights behind it like in the movie, no.
Okay, the reason I ask is my family had a sighting in 1962, and this fog came, it was a clear night, and this fog came rolling in from the sky, out of this, it looked like one point, pinpoint in the sky, and then these colored lights were behind it, flickering behind it, but the fog just covered the whole neighborhood. So I know what you're talking about when you talk about a fog associated with a craft. But in my case, it did have lights on the other side, and then a craft came parked over our neighborhood. So I was curious about that.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay, so now were there any other incidences where you were abducted that you haven't told us about?
Yeah, a lot of them, yeah. I have three stepbrothers from my wife, I mean my mom's third husband or second husband. First husband she didn't marry, but the third one, me and my older stepbrother, we were driving from our town to a smaller town nearby for a big party. One of his friends was having a birthday party, so we were driving. And that's a short drive, like, you know, 7 or 8 miles. And as we were driving there, we saw a bright light in the sky, like you would think, you know, a helicopter that's flying low or a plane that's coming in for landing, because there is an airport between the two towns. And yet it seemed to be following us. You know, it would slow down and then turn, and that's why we're thinking, you know, maybe a helicopter, because planes don't stop. You know, helicopters can't. And then we lost sight of it because of the trees, and then we came around a bend, and lo and behold, there's a UFO, classic UFO shape, landed smack dab in the middle of the road. And my stepbrother, never having seen anything like that before, just all of a sudden was wide-eyed and, you know, jaw fell to his lap. And I remember thinking to myself, finally, now somebody else is, you know, going to go through it like me, and I'll have a witness to verify my story. And as we just sat there, a bunch of them started coming out of the ship, and more than I had ever seen at one time before. There must have been 10 on his side and 10 on my side.
A bunch
and
of
I
what?
Watched
a bunch of what?
Of the grays.
Oh.
Yeah, so there were, like I said, that was the largest grouping of grays that I had ever seen. Because usually, you know, you see 3, 4, 5, and so forth. Even in the, you know, examination room, you know, if you see 2 or 3 in the background while there's 1 or 2 working on you, that's the most you would see. But this time there was a bunch of them. And he was just standing there shocked as they came over to his side. And I felt a big compulsion to look out my window. I was a passenger, and I held off as long as I could because I knew the minute I make eye contact, they're going to, you know, boom, I'm going to lose consciousness, I'm going to lose control, and I probably won't remember any of it. And so eventually I do look at them, and sure enough, the next thing I know, we're driving down that country road, we roll into that town, and boom, it's closed. It's like 4 or 5 hours later. Everything's closed, the party's over, he goes to his friend's house, was going to go knock up on the door, and then he notices the clock on the dash of the car, and it's like 4 a.m. And it was just like, what? There's no way. And he didn't remember at all, and at that time, neither did I. Because in hindsight, you know, I looked, we both remembered coming across a farmer with a big combine out in the middle of the road, and that had slowed us down for a while.
Yeah.
And it was one of those false memories that they give you to explain, you know, what happened, but that eventually falls away and you get the real memory back.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as I get older, you know, and as time goes by, the false memories fade, but the real memories come back.
And besides, that farmer wouldn't have held you up for 4 hours.
Oh, exactly.
Into the middle of the night. I mean, he wouldn't have even been out there in the middle of the night.
Exactly.
So,
exactly. Yeah. But it seems like that was just, you know, they use whatever they can. That,
right.
You know, the least ridiculous just to make it a cover story so you don't, you know, freak out. But again, how do they do that when you're already driving? You know, it's not like, boom, we woke up and we were parked. Mm-hmm. We were driving at like 50 miles per hour down the country road. You know, how did they make my stepbrother drive like that, you know, while, you know, I mean, without running into the road and hitting a tree or something? You know, that's why I say their control over us is scary.
Is your stepbrother still with us?
Yes, yes.
Would he be willing to talk to MUFON?
Probably not. I haven't talked to any of my stepbrothers in a long time. After my mom died of cancer a long time ago, and me and my second stepfather never really got along, and those were his sons from a previous marriage.
Yeah.
And so the only reason I was friends with the oldest stepbrother is because we shared a room, because he came to live with us for a couple of years. And so I couldn't even call him now if I wanted to. I don't have his number. But we just haven't kept in touch over the years.
Yeah. I need to take one more break just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, 89.3 FM. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with alien experiencer, or abductee, as some people like to be called abductees, some people like to be called experiencers. He has had experience with otherworldly beings and all of his life. And but you see, what I'm saying, Tim, is the reason I'm asking you this about your sisters and your stepbrothers, other people who have witnessed this along with you, it's all, you know, multiple, not that you're not to be believed, but it's always best to have multiple witnesses and someone else come forward and say, yeah, I was there, and I remember this happening, and I didn't know what was going on, and yada yada. Somebody to back up your, you know, back up your story, verify what you're saying.
Oh, I agree, yeah.
Is there anybody that can do that?
Well, I could, you know, I could reach out to my older sister and see if she remembers that night, but my younger sister, I haven't talked to her. We had a falling out ages ago, and again, I don't even have her number to call. So, but other than that, no, not really. You know, as you get older, people go their separate ways. They move into different states, and, you know, even people that used to be good friends or even siblings, you know, you just lose touch with, and, you know, you don't talk to anymore.
Yeah. So, you said something about them being able to find you again, implant. Do you think they have implanted you?
Oh, yes. I cut one out of my leg when I was in college.
You cut it out?
I cut it out. It was on my left shin bone, about 4 inches above my ankle, and it was right over the bone, so there's no veins or arteries or anything in the way, and you could feel that there was something underneath the skin, and it was just getting so painful. I mean, it would just, out of nowhere, it would just start burning and hurting, and, you know, and I know it didn't get there by me. It wasn't put there. I didn't, you know, like have an accident and then somehow get a, you know, something lodged under my skin. I knew it had to be from them.
What did it look like?
Well, after I cut it out, it was just a little sliver of glass that was more like a prism because you could move it in the light, and it had rainbow colors. You know, it was clear until you put it in the light.
Mm-hmm.
And I bandaged out my leg, and I set the clear glass on my desk, and then I went to class. This happened back when I was in college. And as I came home that night, I was thinking, okay, now what can I do to test this? You know, can I put it under a microscope? Can I, you know, I was coming up with all ideas of what I was going to do to try to figure out, you know, what this little thing was. And I go into my dorm room, and, of course, I didn't have any roommates. I didn't have a pet. The window was closed, and it was gone. It was just gone. No residue, like it melted away. No broken glass, like it had broken. It was just gone. So I have no idea whether it melted away into the air, whether they came back and got it, or if it just disappeared somehow.
Yeah. I've heard that before, too.
I know they put something in my left nasal cavity because that was probably the most painful abduction I ever had. And I do consider myself an abductee, not an experiencer.
Oh, okay.
Because this is, you know, experiencers are all about, oh, it's a good thing, and, you know, I have a handler, and they care for me, and this and that. I never got any of that.
Mm-hmm.
It was all very clinical, very matter of fact, very, you know, abductee.
Very,
you know,
very one-sided.
Yeah, I did not volunteer for this. I did not sign up to be this. I did not want this. And in the early years, it caused a lot of fear and, you know, bad emotions and so forth. And it's only now at 54 I can look back, and of course now with all the TV and the books and Carla Turner and Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs, I mean, we have all these resources now that we can look at and figure it out. Mm. And so it's a lot easier now to deal with it than it was back then.
Have you ever had an x-ray of the area where this alleged implant is?
No. But I have had MRIs of my head because I've been injured and so forth. And nobody ever said, hey, we found this little metal object in your head.
Hmm.
But then again, if it was glass, it wouldn't show up. You know, certain things show up under MRIs and x-rays and certain things don't. But no, I've never had anything show up on that, you know, on x-rays or MRIs.
Are these memories, are they conscious memories? Or?
Oh, yes. I've never been hypnotized. I don't even think I could be hypnotized, to be honest with you. But most of these memories, like I said, the very early ones I always had. You know, I always remembered them. It was later on going through my teenage years that I would just, you know, boom, have missing time. You know, I remember once I went to a park with my sisters, and we were about 12 or 13 or 14, something like that. And in those days, you know, your mom would drop you off for a couple hours, come back, pick you up. Well, she came back to pick us up, and I was nowhere around. And she got really mad. She asked me, I said, oh, where's Tim? Oh, we don't know. And so eventually she just assumed I had went home with a friend and was playing at their house. And so she came back hours later, and I was there. And she started yelling at me. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You just dropped me off. And so she's like, no, I didn't. You know, and then she tells me what time it is. And I'm at a total loss. I mean, I don't even remember getting into the pool. I remember just being dropped off. The next thing I know, there's my mother yelling at me because she had to come back for just me.
And how old were you at the time?
About 13 or 14 years old.
But your mother was going through.
Oh, she was mad because, you know, back in those days, you know, kids were seen and not heard, you know. And she said she's going to pick you up at 12. At 12:05, you're in trouble.
Yeah, right.
You know,
yeah.
So those were the days back then. It was all, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am.
Right, right.
But, yeah, there were several occasions of, you know, just missing time. And then later, like that time with my stepbrother in the car, you know, I had that false memory of a combine because, you know, having all its lights on. And it was only after time that that memory faded away and I remembered what really happened. Although I don't remember going into the ship. I don't remember them doing anything to me in the ship. But I do remember the car right there and seeing the UFO in the middle of the street. And then the 20 aliens coming out to collect us. I remember that.
Do you have any conscious memories of being inside the craft, inside a craft?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Tell us about that.
One, I was on a table about 3 feet off the ground. It was stainless steel. It was a very dark room. And I looked around a little bit. And over to my right, there were three grays next to a door. The door was shut, but you could see that it was a door by the structure. And they were obviously talking to each other, although I couldn't hear anything because they were just staring at each other. And then after a few minutes, they noticed me sitting up. They looked my way, and bang, that memory ends. And the other two times that I remember being on a ship, one, I was walking in a very small hallway with very little windows. And I remember looking out and being amazed at how many stars there were. You know, there wasn't a planet Earth or anything. It's not like we were just in orbit. It was just a bunch of stars. And then a gray walked through a door, and we met eyes, and boom. I didn't remember anything after that. But the most fascinating one was when I was in what apparently was one of their laboratories. There was a gray working at a workbench. And there were some instruments there, like I assume a microscope or centrifuge or whatever, you know, tools that they would use. And there were all these tubes, like you would see at a museum, with embryos in them, with amber-colored fluid, in all different sizes, like in different stages of growth. And the room, you know, the other rooms of the alien ship smelled, well, like urine, to put it bluntly. In this room, it was a very strong smell, like they never cleaned it or whatever chemical they were using smelled a lot like urine, and it was very strong.
And ammonia. Could it have been ammonia?
Oh, it very well could have been.
Yeah.
And it was just the weirdest out of all my abduction experiences. That was the weirdest, because you could just look in these jars and they look like babies. I mean, some look like alien babies and some look like human babies. And I was really surprised that I was allowed to walk around, because I was always, you know, under somebody's control. I don't ever, you know, well, except for the, you know, that one time walking down the hallway, and that was even for just a minute or two. Here, I was allowed to walk around in this room for probably 5-10 minutes, and there was a gray, you know, like I said, at his workbench doing whatever, and I actually remember at one point him talking to me, although I don't remember him leaving his workstation to do it. And I, again, if you offered me $1 million, I could not tell you what we talked about, but I know that he was talking to me, like explaining to me, I guess, what they were doing, or, you know, what was in the jars, or, you know, I assume it had something to do with those lines, because that's what I would have asked is, you know, are these babies, or are they dead, or are they alive, you know, that kind of thing. But I do not remember the conversation, but I distinctly remember the room. It was dark. The embryos, like I said, were in these jars of amber fluid, and they were all different sizes. I mean, from like a baby food jar, which is very small, all the way up to one of the big jars that they sell, you know, eggs in, you know, and it was just weird. I mean, it's like weird.
Have you had you at that time read anything about alien abduction?
I didn't start reading books on that until I was probably 18, 19, and 20. The earliest book along those lines that I read, I remember when I was 12 years old, I read the book that Von Däniken came out with, the first one, Ancient Aliens, where he produced Ancient Alien Theory.
Yeah. Yeah,
and but I can't remember the title.
Chariots
of the Gods. Yeah. Yes, and I remember I read that book in a day, and that really opened my eyes, and I started thinking, oh, they're aliens. They're not elves. They're aliens.
Yeah, but I've read that book too, and there's nothing in there, nothing in that book about these jars with fetuses in them.
Oh yeah. That is true.
And so the reason I'm getting at that, did you read about it first or did you see it first? Because if you saw it first, you had no idea that many other abductees had experienced that same thing, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I definitely lived it first before I started reading about it first.
Yeah.
Yeah, because also back in those days, there weren't really a lot of books on the subject, or any that I know of.
No.
It wasn't until much later that, you know, like I said, Carla Turner, David Jacobs, and the other ones started coming out with books that dealt with it, and what an abductee was, and everything. And so for the majority of my life going through this, it was just, you know, my secret, you know, something that you just don't talk about in flight company. It was hard enough to get people just to talk about other planets and, gee, do you think that there are other life forms out there, let alone that they're actually coming here and doing things. You know, nobody would make that leap.
Yeah. So what do you think their agenda is, at least the ones that you've encountered?
I think it's basically like a game warden. I think they're here to tag us and study us, and whether that's to make a better steak for dinner or whether they're trying to save us from extinction, I do not know. All I know is that, you know, I don't get that whole experience, or they're, you know, they love us, they care for us, and they're our forefathers, and they see to this planet, and they want us to join the Galactic Federation once we're mature enough. I don't get any of that at all.
No.
All I get is cold, methodical, going through the motions, just like a doctor does in a third world hospital. Wow. You know, he has 500 patients to see in 2 hours, and he's just trying to do the best job he can with what he's got.
Yeah.
You know, I never once had any of them show me any compassion never be nice to me, you know, nothing. It's all just very cold, very methodical, and to this day, I still don't know why me. Yeah. I mean, I know that they like hazel-eyed people, or, you know, because that, for some reason, or people of certain genetic descent, like Europeans and Celtic and so forth, yeah. is one of the, there's a high majority of those that have those. So I don't know if that's why, or it's just crazy. And I know they go down through family lines, but to date, neither one of my sons has ever said anything about it. So it must have ended with me. And my mother never said anything about it, so I don't think she was ever abducted.
Well, hopefully it does not go down through family lines. So.
Oh, yeah, because both my boys are grown. My oldest boy is almost 30 now. My youngest boy is 24, and, you know, I told him my story, but neither one of them has ever had anything, you know, close to that experience. You know, they get scared watching those kind of movies, so they don't even watch them.
All right, I'm afraid we are out of time, but Mr. Tim Price, I want to thank you so much for joining us on We Are Not Alone.
It was my pleasure.
Okay. Thanks again. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
You too.
And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And this show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at WHFR.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is ufoimplications.com. It's ufoimplications.com. So please stay tuned to WHFR.fm for the station making waves for the best in alternative programming. I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.